Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Binchtown TV. We're back with a pitch town. It's been so long, especially since I've been. I think the last one we did was either Raised by Wolves or Last Kingdom, which went the distance. So it's
True
me.
Blood.
Nah, True Blood was a year ago.
Last Kingdom was way long, way earlier than True Blood.
Anyway, this is a pitch
in the middle
town.
Of this intro.
We've got Luke and Jimmy, and we've got a special guest. Matt Kelly, king of Geekscape, our network, and of course he has 1 million podcasts. I'll let him intro all of those, but most importantly, you know him from Horror Movie Night, you know him from One Hit Thunder, you know him from the best pod of all time, my favorite episode of, which Shia Girl was a co-host of, but I'm going to throw it to him. So his pitch town, and for anyone who doesn't know what our pitch town is, so we invite a friend or one of the Binchtown members brings a pilot of a show that other people haven't seen and a show they really love, and they pitch it to us, and at the end of the episode we have to decide whether or not we're going to binge immediately, add it to the list, or Shark Tank. And for that reason, I'm out. Kick them to the curb. So Matt, I'm gonna give you the opportunity to do your intro that you came up with for The Prisoner from 1967.
Hit. Well, first and foremost, I want to say that no dissing to the other Bingetown folks, but I am so glad that I'm doing this with the people who I consider the true heart and soul of Bingetown, which is, of course, Jim, Kathleen, and Luke. So the year was 1967. In January, the Rolling Stones were told they were not allowed to perform on television unless they changed the lyrics from "Let's Spend the Night Together" to "Let's Spend Some Time Together." CBS renewed Gunsmoke for its 12th season, making it the longest running show of the time. And the finale of the crime drama The Fugitive became the most watched television episode of the entire decade. TV was mostly stale and formulaic sitcoms, talk shows, and occasionally a quite tame crime drama. A small show called Star Trek debuted a year earlier, which had an optimistic look at the future. But you had to look to anthology shows like Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Twilight Zone, or The Outer Limits to even dare to dabble into the dark waters of political satire, horror, or gasp, abstract camera shots. It was at this time that The Prisoner debuted. A frustrated actor named Patrick McGougall had wrapped the final season of his spy drama Secret Agent, and he was sick of the way that TV tended to speak down to its audience and took no chances. In his frustration, he created the concept for a 17-episode show called The Prisoner. And in 1967 in the UK and a year later in the United States, we were all allowed to experience its debut episode, The Arrival. And here
amazing.
We are.
And Matt, how old were you when this came out?
I was negative 30. So the way that I discovered this show, I'm not sure if any of you remember this, because I'm definitely the most senior person on this podcast today, but ABC and Fox and NBC in the 90s would run these really wild TV specials. And one of them that I still have the VHS tape for was called Science Fiction Through History. And it was produced by the Museum of Television and Art. And it was about the entire history of science fiction from the beginning of television all the way up until the 90s. And it was broken into like shows about time travel, shows about like nightmare worlds, you know, all shows about exploration. But the only show that could not be fit into a single box and was given its own segment was this 10-minute breakdown of why The Prisoner changed television forever. And that sat with me forever. And when Netflix first became a thing, one of the first discs I ever ordered to be delivered in the mail was the complete series of The Prisoner, because I had been like so curious about this show for like 20 years. And I finally was able to watch it. And I'm not going to sit here and say it is a flawless 17 episodes. It could be a 12 episode season and be just fine. But when you look at it through the lens of everything that was existing before it, it is undeniable, as The Guardian once wrote, it is the Citizen Kane of television and the program that changed the entire landscape of genre TV. Like, when you look at it, that framework, it's like, this is wild that this was airing on TV in 1967, because you can absolutely, I think even in this episode, you can see where like fans of the show, like the creators of X-Files and Lost, like absolutely were pulling something from
So I want to say a couple things, because I've never heard of The Prisoners. This was the first time I ever heard of it. And I knew this was, as Kathleen said, a classic Matt Kelly recommendation here. So something about me, I am shamelessly a victim of the times when it comes to entertainment in form of media and TV. Like, I am a sucker for production value, and that's a very lame thing to be when you're on a TV podcast, but I'm open-minded, you know, and it takes something like a pitch down for me to sit down and actually watch something like this. So I just want you to know that going into it, it was an uphill battle for me, but I was pretty pleasantly surprised with like some of the production value of what we were getting for 1967. I have like a skewed vision in my head of what I was going into watching this episode, thinking what I was going to see, like the coloring, the set designs, all of that was like way better than I thought it was going to be for 1967. I do have a bunch of questions, and there are some, I'm sure we're going to be going through a bunch of these things here.
For sure.
But I definitely like the Shutter Island / Black Mirror vibes we're getting here. And it, you're right. It's kind of like setting the foundations for shows like those. So I'm happy. Like, again, I probably never would have sat down and watched this without something like a pitch down. And I love pitch down so much, because it just allows us to have people who are passionate about these shows that we don't get to see, to really just shove it in our face, be like, yo, watch this shit. Let's find out. Do we like it? And let's talk about it. So I'm ready to talk about this, because like you're saying, like 17 episodes, one season, right? Like, it's self-contained and finished. And I think it said 8.5 on IMDb. At least that's what Amazon had on
Rotten Tomatoes. 100%.
Yeah. For critic or audience.
Let me do a little check.
If you compared it to Citizen Kane, I'm assuming critics.
And Patrick McGoohan?
Yeah, I never figured out that last name. I probably should have done that.
He wrote it, directed it. Yeah,
he directed most of the big episodes. He created it. He actually, I was reading an interview where he was saying that he regretted starring in it, because it created this fan theory that the character that he's playing in this show is a continuation of his character from the show that he had quit. But like, it was more that he was just like venting, like he was sick of doing a spy show, but he wanted to like that was already ingrained in him. So he's like, all right, well, what if a guy who is a spy quit? Like, no high up government agency is going to let someone with all of that information just walk away clean. And like created this nightmare political satire view of like the lengths that a government would go to protect their like darkest fucked up secrets.
I have the Rotten Tomatoes. It's 100% critics, 88% audience.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so good. So good work.
Are either one is, I think I know Kathleen's a no on this. Are there any Simpsons fans on the call right now?
I've seen enough. Yeah, like what do you mean by
There's a full Simpsons episode that's just a parody of The Prisoner, where Homer creates a website and it's like him doing all these fake conspiracy theories, and he accidentally states one conspiracy theory that's true, and he gets brought to an island, and they brought back the actor from this show to voice his roommate. So Homer was number 5 in the village. He was living with number 6. And it even does a bit where Homer tries to run away and the giant rover ball like suffocates him.
Like, that's funny.
Let's talk about that freaking rover ball for a second.
Yeah. Really
Jesus,
quick.
Man. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Let me just jump in really quick and say that I think it's perfect. We're doing a pitch town, but we want to make sure the audience knows that this scenario here, we understand that you probably have not seen the show. So we are going to talk about it in a lens where Matt's going to be pitching it to you guys as well, even though we've already seen it. But us talking about it is going to give you an idea of if you're going to want to watch this pilot episode and continue on.
Yes.
So you don't have to necessarily have seen it to enjoy this episode. Hear what we have to say about it. Decide if you want to start the show. Matt's job is to talk you into it just like he talked us into to watching it. And he's got to talk us into continuing if we're nosed.
We'll see. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's go back to the rover ball. Luke, first of all, I don't know if you're about to say this, but I mean, obviously ridiculous. You know, it's just really bad with the 60s and it's just a balloon, but whatever. But it's an obvious smoke monster from Lost. The homage that J.J. Abrams did to me. I thought, you know, Matt, you told me yourself, I did some research. J.J. Abrams loved the show. It was huge in his how he wrote Lost and all of his other sci-fi TV shows.
Yeah, I have a direct quote from him, actually. I pulled up a quote. He said, "I love that show. The way that it was oddly cryptic and a combination of science fiction, mystery, and character is something that I pulled for Lost and Alias." And then the logo of The Prisoner, which is like that weird giant wheeled bicycle, that bicycle logo he even uses throughout the show Fringe. Whenever someone's brain is being reprogrammed, that image flashes on the screen for a second. So it's like he just like loves this show and tries to homage it where he can.
So that was actually going to be one of my first questions, because right there, you kind of answered it, I think. Does it lean more heavily into sci-fi and like the idea of it just like being like futuristic in that sense? Because I don't even know if I'm asking the right questions, because this is a 1967 show, you know, like I don't know if I'm like going too far or not, but like basically what I want to know is how much does it lean into like technology for the time and stuff like that, where it's going to be all confusing with like the answers for the show can be like next level, you know, like Lost type of things.
It's more, I would say that it's more of almost like watching it's like a 60s mystery on like a torture style almost. So they did it in this episode, but it's a trend throughout every single episode. A different actor plays number two, like constantly. Mm. They're constantly rotating out who plays number two as like a means of fucking with six. Like he never knows what's constant happening around him. And that whole idea of like the numbering, I think this episode in like a really good way shows like the level of what they'll do to a person, which, you know, to jump to the end of this episode a little bit for spoilers, but they make him think that his friend committed suicide. And then we, the audience, find out that his friend is perfectly fine and that this was just another job he was doing for the government, like shamelessly. And it's every episode is like elements of that, where it's like anything that you think might be real isn't. And it's almost like I don't think that it's an accident that chess plays such a heavily visual element throughout this episode, because it is like a 17 episode game of chess between number six and the entire village. And that's why I love, one of my favorite scenes is when you think that he's escaped in the helicopter, and the woman who gave him the information sits down to play chess with the old man, and he just looks at her and says, "We're all pawns, you know." And then immediately she realizes that she was just used as a pawn in their game to like mess with this dude more.
I will say, did we get a name or number? Not a name, obviously. A number for the girl, for the woman.
I think when I was reading the wiki, it said number 9 for her. She's not, but
we're not told in this episode. Yeah.
When she came into the episode is when I really started getting interested, right? Because you have the bad guys and you have him, but you need someone else to kind of be on his side or something. Like Cobb seemed like he was sick and dying in the first place. So you think maybe he's on number six's side. But when the number 9 or the woman comes in with that cool outfit, I was like, okay, I could get into this possible love interest, maybe.
Someone on our side. You're always trying to ship people.
You
should probably not try to ship anybody in the village. Although I did write down, like, I wouldn't hate living in the village. It seems like a pretty dope place, ultimately.
Yeah, it's fun, dude.
It's always interesting to me to see, in 1967 when they were making this, what they kind of thought would be this like futuristic utopia for people, like the cool phones and the statue heads with the cameras in it and things like that, like what they thought would be cool back then, not knowing like what we would have now, but in general, just like a dystopia disguised as a utopia is just cool in general.
I like that there's those elements even in this first episode that you get where it's like, you know, like that scene where he's giving him the tour of the village, but like he's like actively calling out like, what? So you've just brainwashed all of these people into living the way that you want them to live. And like when he goes to walk away, number two yells stop and every single person in the village freezes at once. Like, like they are so under the thumb of this organization, or like him being in the room and the music not shutting off. And like within the second that he destroys the music box, you hear the loudspeaker be like, we need someone to go to number six's room to fix his electronics. Like they are just watching every single movement that you make when you're inside the village. And I get the vibe from just reading about this guy who created the show that this is what he, I think, truly believes is out there, that there is these fucked up mind games that are being played on people constantly and that they're being manipulated constantly. And one of the quotes that kind of has endured beyond the show is early on when he's being interviewed by number two, he says, I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own. And that quote comes up constantly in episodes, almost as if, because they record everything, so they'll just keep playing it over and over for him. And it almost reminds me of like those moments in Severance where they have to like just keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again in the punishment room. It's almost like they utilize his exact words to mock and belittle him throughout the rest of the show. Like it is a heavy, it dives into some like heavy, dark stuff, which again, like, I think the framework that I always thought about was when you watch something like The Twilight Zone before this, like The Twilight Zone was a quick 22 minutes. You had your start, your middle, and then your end. And there might be a little bit of mystery there, but like it told its story. And then you were like off to the races. This was really the first time that someone was making a show where you had to spend weeks thinking about what you watched, waiting for the next episode to bring you even like a little bit of closure to something, and like never knowing if you were going to get the closure that you were looking for as a viewer. So it's, I mean, I guess that's kind of Losty too in a little bit. It was in a way like the British water cooler show.
Exactly. Old school 1960s water cooler. I couldn't even imagine. Would this be like our favorite show? Maybe.
Yeah,
probably.
Dad would have been 17 when this came out. So I immediately like was watching it tonight and I'm like, look at this. Have you seen this before? And he was like, I know this guy, but I've never seen this. Like he's seen him in other things, but did not recognize the show. But I wanted to say, in the Wikipedia page, it says the finale of The Prisoner left open-ended questions, generating controversy and letters of outrage. Following the final episode, McGowan claimed he had to go into hiding for a while.
Yeah. The final episode is one of the trippiest fucking things I've ever watched. Like, I was just like, this is crazy.
But I will say that in 1967, they weren't used to shows like that. I feel like we are more used to shows maybe don't answer every single question. Back in the 60s, they didn't really have like the internet or anything to like read up or supplemental content. They're probably just like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Is there any polar bears in this show?
There's no polar bears in this, as far as I can recall. The only other line that I wrote down, but I do think that it's almost the most meta line of the show, is when we first see that rover ball show up and he looks at number two and says, what was that? And number two just says, well, that would be telling you something. And it's like, and I feel like that was almost in a weird way, him writing into the script a direct line to the audience of like, We're not here to tell you anything. Like you're the ones that are going to have to watch this and do your homework to keep tabs on the information that you're provided, and you put it together yourself. Like,
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Even this particular episode, when you think about television from like way back then, everything is spelled out for you, right? Like, even I always think of like Psycho. You watch Psycho and it ends with this like 15-minute monologue of a doctor explaining to you Norman Bates's mental condition and explaining to you every element of every murder. And it's like they literally had to explain to the audience every piece of what they saw. And in this one, the last like 5 minutes plays out with almost no dialogue. It's like you, the audience, have to figure out visually what's happening. He is not going to give you any exposition to piece together what's happening in certain scenes. And I really dig that.
So that's something I wanted to ask right off the bat, because it kind of perked my ears when you said that he kind of got not typecasted, but people thought that this character was a crossover of other projects that he worked on. Right.
Yeah.
So is there any context that we're supposed to have going into the show outside of that, like Austin Powers, like intro you're kind of just going around London, whatever.
That's another one that I like. That's another thing I like, though. Instead of showing you anything that happens in dialogue in that opening scene in like 2 minutes gives you the only backstory that they're ever going to provide you on what led to him going to this island. And it's done in total silence, except for music. Like, I'm like, I kind of dig that. But I'm glad that you brought up Austin Powers, because I think for like a modern context, it would literally be like, after the last James Bond movie, if Daniel Craig just made a wild fucked up show about an actor who didn't want to play a spy anymore and was like trapped in like a television station where he was forced to play this character over. Like, this show is so insanely meta in a way that definitely 1967 was not used to meta television.
That's a perfect comparison, honestly.
Yeah, and I have a couple things to say about the show in general. Luke, you saying that we have no context and backstory, and then Matt, you confirming that we never get it.
Yeah.
That's kind of a downer for me. And the way that I see this show is almost something where, like, you have the original show of him being, you know, the spy, and now we have the backstory, and then season, like, 8 is we have this torture season where this is the actual season where this show takes place in, you know, this village. You know what I mean? I totally get that they're telling us something and you have the 2 minutes and then boom, we're right into it. But I immediately was like, is there like a prequel or something? Did I miss something? You know,
so, not to spoil the end of the whole series, but they did do a remake of this show.
I did see that.
Yeah, they did a remake of this show in 1999. And while they wouldn't say definitively about anything, apparently in one of the episodes of the remake, when the new number 6 that you're following is trying to escape, he stumbles into a cave where there is an old man hiding who's dressed exactly like number 6 from the original series. And he says something of the law along the lines of, just make sure that they know that I did finally escape. Like, it's like which implies that, like, this is going to be this man's existence, is that until the day he dies, he will be trying to escape this hell that the government created for him to keep their secrets safe from the wrong hands.
And I'm sure, and I can see, like, the groundbreakingness of this show, especially in the 60s. Like, for example, I mean, the reveal at the end in the 60s, people were probably like, Jesus Christ, like, with the whole, he's not dead thing. I mean, who knows? I don't know anything about past TV shows, but that's probably one of the first times someone in the audience was hit with that. Yeah. But I think this show is really interesting because it could have went a million ways, I feel like. Like, obviously, it still can because it's only episode 1. But the way that I first took it, and I had a preconceived notion only that what we talked about, Matt, where you said, you know, inspiration for J.J. Abrams. Obviously, we're big fans of Lost and, you know, other things like that. So I'm putting some things in my head before it starts. And I was actually a little disappointed that we meet number two so early. I wanted them to mess with me on screen where number six is like looking around and it's all, you know, whether it's a sci-fi show or it's like, you know, it's, a, you know, they're torturing him and it's, you know, that's just a version of their torture, or it's a fantasy show where they're in this village. Like, you know, when the show's starting and we don't see number two yet, you know, he turns around and boom, there's the taxi. It seems like certain things are very like also fantasy sci-fi where I was like, okay, is there like Lost style where there's something special about this village where he's just in it and we need to figure it out? And then we don't need, you know, the reveal yet that someone's messing with him. Obviously, we know we're going to get that. And maybe that could have been like the end of the pilot that, you know, give us the episode of us looking around this village and being like, what the hell is going on?
I think that's why this is the only episode where number two changes mid episode. And I think that that was intentional because I think they want it to establish right out the gate that like, whoever number two is, it doesn't fucking matter because number one is the person that's in charge. And like, you have to work your way up to number one. Number two is going to be a rotating door that's constantly replaceable. But number one is the person who's in charge of everything.
I think kind of like what you're getting at, Jimmy, too, is like part of the problem is like viewing it from the lens of today and stuff. And like looking back, like how do you fill out 17 episodes of the show with what felt like we already got like large part of the setup? So I guess the question to Matt becomes, without giving away too much, like, is this the type of show that's going to kind of be like a chase, like a not, I don't want to say repetitive, cyclical kind of show where we're going to be like, he makes some progress, then he pulls back because the government or they get another step ahead of him. Like, how does this play out for 17 episodes? I'm assuming each is an hour long. Like, what kind of other things can we look for that I guess is there to like more entice us to binge the rest of the season?
Like, it's basically, so, is it Groundhog's Day for 17 episodes almost, where, you know, we spend the episode trying to
actually.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and that,
so
I mean, that can be fine. It just depends on how they write it.
Almost every episode is a cat and mouse of watching number two and number six try to outwit each other. I will say that one of my favorite things about this show is how every single episode ends with just a zoom in on his face in the cell block slamming in front of him. And that's like his visual style of essentially saying like, he's still not out yet. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you get so accustomed to that loud jail cell slam that there's like a part of you when you like binge this show. Cause I binged it pretty much every time I've watched it. Like I just knock it out over like a week. You're just like, I just want to stop hearing that jail cell slam. Like, but I would say the moment that gives you the best idea of what this show is a really tiny, inconsequential thing. But it's when he's in the hospital after he's had like the Rover ball get him and he's walking around and there's just a guy standing in complete darkness making gibberish noises and you have no clue what's going on. And there is a lot of that happening in this show where it's almost like the best way I can explain it is if you've ever studied or watched any magician talk about how to do magic and it's all about the fake out distraction over here, is they do a phenomenal job of just throwing these really weird couple seconds of something where like you're kind of like, what is happening over there? And then it quickly, I think of like in The Shining where they pass by the room with the guy dressed like a bear. You know what I mean? Like, it's just those like those weird moments that just get burned into your brain. And you're like, what was the story with the guy making the noises in the hospital?
Similar to like Severance when you see the goats, like in that random room. So similar to that. Okay.
Yeah. Gosh. Like it's a lot of, and I think that's where you look at like, I think we're all in agreement here that the Lost finale was great, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people hate it.
Yeah.
But I'm in safe company. It's a brilliant ending.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that's because you have to have it attuned to your brain that certain questions will never be answered. And like, and that it's okay. Like, we don't get all the answers in our entire existence on life. There will always be things where you're like, why did that person stop talking to me? Why did this person who is the most important person in my life in eighth grade, like, just disappear? And I haven't thought about them in 30 years. Like, there are always mysteries in our life, which means that weird television can get away with throwing some mysteries that you just don't get answers for. As long as the overarching story is concluded, then you're satisfied. And I think that JJ and the Severance people and all of them pull from The Prisoner, kind of laying this groundwork of, like, you don't have to answer every question. You just have to answer the big questions. And it's fine for there to still be a mystery of, like, what was going on in that room? Who was that person?
So, Matt, let me ask you a question here. Obviously, we're not born and we haven't lived anywhere close to the 60s. So I don't know technologically what it really was like. Just like Luke said, you know, I don't know what I was expecting seeing, you know, the bright colors and the set pieces and stuff. Now, obviously, the room with number two, you know, is supposed to be highly technological them. And also, you know, being able to, like, watch with cameras, like the secret cameras and that stuff. But when it comes to, like, the village, the actual village, the Rover Ball is sci-fi fantasy. Okay. Yes. That we can put that on the side for now. But everything else about the village, it seemingly is kind of normal, except for, like, the doors open by themselves. Obviously, cameras everywhere, sci-fi-ish.
Yeah. Let's say it's sci-fi-ish, more futuristic.
Yeah.
Right, right. So what I'm asking is, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Like, how blown away should the people of the 60s have been? Would they have seen this as, like, super, super sci-fi, or would they have just been like, okay, like, this is futuristic and could happen? Like, obviously, the River Ball aside.
I think that it's almost neither, because I think the show is way more focused on, like, the stuff that the people in the 60s, I think, need it to be shown and to take away is that this is probably one of the first times the concept that people could just be filming you 24/7 was, like, ever introduced to an audience. So I think that that's the horrific sci-fi element of it. Like, I think number two on his tour really says, like, this village is equipped to just give you all the accommodations you want to have until the day you die. You're just never going to leave here. And that's it's that idea of, I mean, how many movies and TV shows have we watched where it's essentially like, we're going to give you utopia, but you're also losing every ounce of freedom that you've ever had in your life to live here. And this is kind of an early example of that, where I don't think the village is supposed to feel too futuristic as much as it's supposed to feel like utopian in nature, like this, like, perfect society.
Right. So the reason I brought that up is my preconceived notion was lost. So I was saying, okay, is this village, like, some kind of secret? Like, it's some kind of fantasy powerful village that we need to figure out the secrets of how it can run that way. Like, is him turning around and the taxi's right there, like, something, like, it's just a shot of how they just want it to show, or, you know, on camera, or is it, like, magically it pops up, or, you know, things like that. Obviously, I'm getting the Rover Balls, like, the smoke monster. But again, to me, it's one or the other, where I was thinking about, all right, Lost here. So I'm thinking about, like, what's the specialty of this island, when really it's probably more like Westworld season one, where this is a created world futuristically, where, you know, they want to break the maze, just like he wants to break the maze to get out.
Yeah, I would say to refocus the way you think about those questions, like, how does the taxi magically show up? And I would think of it through this lens. Number six is far from the first person that they've ever done this to.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that I think it's more of, they have done this so many times that they can absolutely predict everything that person is going to do during the time that they're breaking. Like, think of season one of The Magicians. Like, this is like the millionth time that they've run this scenario with somebody. They know every possible move that might happen.
You're trying to butter us up with this.
I know what I'm... Hey, I knew what I was coming to. I prepared. But, like, you know, they know, hey, he's probably going to need to get around. Let's just shoot the taxi there. Like, she's even like, hey, you don't have the money? That's fine. I'll get you next time. Like, she's just like going about her day because she knows that this dude's going to be here forever. She doesn't have to. He doesn't know he's going to be here forever yet, but she definitely does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I reframed pretty early on in the episode. Basically, once you meet number two, I reframed to the point where this is a built, you know, whatever you want to call it, simulation almost to torture him into telling them what they want, which is cool as shit.
Yeah.
And you can see how it is the inspiration for a lot of the shows that we love today. And even for me, whether it's as surface level and minuscule as I want to say, like with Westworld, like I just saw that kind of inspiration. And obviously Westworld was a movie first, but just the built futuristic aspect of it. And, you know, there's questions that I don't know if you can answer. Like, are the people in there when he says stop and they stop? Does he actually have control? Do they just listen because they're supposed to be pawns? You know, it's a directorial choice and a writing choice to just show us like, hey, symbolically, if I say stop, everyone stops.
Yeah.
Or does he have control and they will stop?
Does this episode, I feel like it does, but I get a lot of the early episodes bleed together. Does this episode show the human chessboard at a certain point?
No.
Okay.
No,
I don't remember. Yeah.
I know that there is an episode about them literally playing human chess at a certain point, but like that furthering the like they're all pawns in a game of chess. Like there are scenes where they'll just be cutting across the village and people are playing a giant game of human chess in the middle of the village.
Buttering me up, man. That's
here,
bro.
But it is
right in the middle of it.
I want to talk about the Rover Ball one more time because this is something that I want to compliment for this. Like, yes. Do we essentially just have like this giant weird rubber ball that floats out of nowhere? But damn it, if like the look of someone's face smashing up against that plastic ball isn't weirdly effective on like, oh, that looks terrible.
Yeah. I will say, I feel like in the beginning, maybe you guys were making fun of the river ball. I was actually impressed by it. And that specifically, Matt, I think the only corny part about it is like when he's trying to like fight it off, like in the car chase scene, when it finally gets him and it just kind of like beats him up a little bit. It doesn't fully kill him. It's just him being like, ha, ha, around it, which is funny, but the rest is pretty good. I'm like, how do they shoot that? It's pretty damn good. And I like the mystery about that because that's not something I've really ever seen. I know Jimmy's comparing it to Lost, but in general, like, it's just this fucking ball that's in the town and it's following you around. That's fucking scary. And
just to make sure that you don't even attack, like, it attacks the one guy because he was thinking about escaping. He hadn't even made an attempt yet. Like, that's like something to think about is like that first time that you see the ball, he says the number two says he was considering trying to escape. Like, that's how much they get to know you the more they break you down inside the village.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So I wasn't making fun. I mean, I was making fun of the ball, but I also think it was like super. I agree. I think it was like one of the more interesting pieces of the entire episode I'm like kind of looking forward to seeing it. And my question, I guess, to Jimmy and Kathleen here is, were you guys thinking that is straight a piece of controlled technology, or does this thing have a little bit of personality? Like, yeah, is it like fuck this, you know, like, because it felt like at one point our main character's like tiptoeing around, like side eyeing it, but like I couldn't tell if it's.
But he's got the watch on, so he's.
That's true. Yeah. So what do you think? Is
the watch is what was protecting him, right, Matt?
Yeah, the watch, according to the woman who we can decide if we trust or not, I'm going to say that I trust her. She says that that watch is the only thing that can stop the rover ball.
Listen, here's my thing. It's funny to me that, you know, this guy in the village was thinking about considering leaving and he gets fucking got right then and there. Why is it important balloon, to keep number six alive versus just killing him? If he knows so much.
You need his answers. No, they don't. Yeah, they don't want his answers to disappear. They want his answers. They want
to know why he quit. You're saying
they want to know what he knows.
Yeah. Think about it from this. You're just assuming that it's the same government agency that he quit that has
Correct.
Him at the village.
I really was. Okay. Understood. See, yeah, that's why you asked the questions.
Yeah. I mean, my assumption was it was like the enemy, the government that's whatever against his current government. So you took it as the same. I took it as the opposite.
Luke?
I took it as that it was the same.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I like that being the opposite more.
Yeah, me too.
That's fun.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah. The rover ball is probably one of the coolest things. And Luke, to your question, that's where I'm again getting at the whether it's just straight up futuristic sci-fi or if we're talking like sci-fi fantasy, unless you want to say they're getting into like AI where they like created a being that's technological but also has some kind of mind of its own. But if we're getting into sci-fi fantasy like Lost with the Smoke Monster or something, then you're saying, you know, is it like some kind of being? I'm taking it like, I don't want to say it's like one of those freaking little vacuum things that just like runs around and like on the, what are those things on the floor? Because it has to know somehow that you are like, unless they use that as symbolism and just pick the guy and said he was thinking about it, or they already knew, they already had the information that he was thinking about it, and then they pointed it towards him. Mm-hmm. The ball has to somehow know you're thinking what you're thinking and what you're about to do, and it has to be able to come after you.
See, again, I think we're taking it too much like modern day 2023 lens of TV shows. Like, because anytime I'm watching shows, you're always thinking about what's the trope that they're either subverting or they're going for. Whereas you can't do that for a show like this, because this, if it is doing a trope, it's because it made the trope. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Like the whole they or the government enemy, like that's might be tropey now, but this is kind of it. So that's why I didn't immediately assume that it was either going to be the evil or bad, whatever. Didn't even like cross my mind. I didn't think too deeply about it. I haven't thought too deeply about almost any of this yet, because I'm still trying to feel out what kind of show we're getting here. And the more we're talking about it, I'm not gonna lie, like it's interesting me a lot more, like having dialogue about it.
Yeah.
So I will tell you that the rover has its own Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's in how important that creation is. And it wasn't originally supposed to be that. When they were originally doing the show, they had actually built like a robotic wheeled device that had like a siren and everything attached to it, but it wouldn't work in front of camera. And then they decided to just pull from the inspiration of a weather balloon and said, well, what if it's just a floating weather balloon? And I feel like the less that it feels man-made, the creepier it ultimately becomes.
Like, so let me ask you this, Matt. Again, we're in the 60s. If they could have, would they have, like, were they saying, here's this balloon, and we're asking the audience to envision, like, not necessarily a monster, but just, like, something else? Or did they just put it out there saying, who cares? It looks like a freaking balloon, and it'll eat you. It'll kill you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Think,
like,
I
are they saying,
the
like, we don't
half.
Have CGI. We don't have CGI.
I think it's the second half. This was just, think about it from this lens. This is, like, a weird lens to think about things sometimes. But, like, we're thinking about it from like 67 to us, which is like a huge gap, right? Yeah. But like, let's put it in context of like something that we've probably all seen. This is 8 years before Jaws gets released. So it's like in the same vein as like building this big ass shark prop that doesn't work. And you're like, well, we've just got to film around the fact that the shark prop doesn't work until we get it working. Like, they didn't have time to figure out why the robot thing that they built didn't work. They were just like, fuck it. I guess we're going with plan B, the giant balloon.
Iconic.
I popped that thing in 2 seconds.
It's funny that I'm glad we're calling it a rover. Because in my notes, I just said a balloon killed a man. It's just a note on its own.
I may have spoiled for you. They do give it a name in a later episode as the rover. But
no worries. Big, gigantic.
Yeah, sorry. That's like the big ending of an episode. Yeah. Is it like it is? Name is the rover, and everyone went no.
I love that they also use music in such a funny way. Like,
oh, the Pop Goes the Weasel, like weird orchestral version.
That's exactly what it was. Yes, yes. They use it in such funny ways.
Did I hear the Twilight Zone?
No, it was dun 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 dun. Wasn't it Wizard of Oz or something?
I thought it was Twilight Zone with the, I think it was like, it was in the beginning of the episode, something like drove whizzed by him, maybe like, and I'm thinking golf cart, but I don't know that there was a golf cart in this episode.
There's definitely, there's like a weird surf guitar riff that happens throughout that is close to the Twilight Zone guitar riff as
Can you do the Twilight Zone for me, Matt? The
Twilight Zone's like, doo, 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 doo.
That's what I thought I heard.
No, I thought I swear I was hearing.
I heard.
I mean, there's a lot
too,
of them,
Jimmy.
But Pop Goes the Weasel is definitely in there.
Like, that's Pop Goes the Weasel is probably what I'm hearing, and I just correlated it wrong.
Yeah, it'd be like the.
That's I think that's it. Yep.
But it's like this weird, it's like a weird slowed down, but like played on like very sincere orchestra music version of it. Mm-hmm. Like they, I think that this is also one of those early examples of, again, we'll throw the Twilight Zone, like Twilight Zone, you really, Rod Stewart had his hand in almost every aspect of it, even if he didn't write or direct that episode. Like, this is really early in when you're truly seeing a showrunner, like when you're seeing a person who has a specific vision that everyone else has to follow. And this is something that sounds really stupid, but I never thought about it until recently. And it may have even come from you guys on Binge Town, honestly, but I think it was from, I think it was actually from the Gilmore Guys, because they're doing their Marvelous Miss Maisel coverage where they talked about, like, when you get hired to be a writer on a show, like you get hired to write Gilmore Girls, my job is not to write like Matt Kelly. My job is to be able to write a script that sounds like Amy Sherman Palladino's voice.
Yes.
So it's like, this is like really early in like a guy assembling a writer's crew and being like, this is however you are as a writer, you have to throw that away because we have to be like one unified front on like what the vision of this show is. In all of our writing, be it the dialogue, like the plot twists, like everything has to connect and make sense or it's done. Like we blow it all if one thing feels out of place here.
Yeah. And Amy Sherman Palladino is like such a specific voice, too. It's like, you were going to write 12 pages of dialogue, make it 24 and fit it into 42 minutes.
Being generous. Her scripts for Gilmore Girls is 44 minute runtime were 115 pages long.
Yeah, it's out of control. Wow.
And they weren't allowed to riff out any like I think on one of the Gilmore Guys episodes, they were interviewing the actor who played Luke and he was talking about how he didn't like the way a phrase felt because he had to say cannot instead of can't. And he was like, can I please say can't? And they had to pause recording for 20 minutes for someone to go and ask Amy if he could change cannot to can't. And her answer was no, he can figure it out.
Like, oh, wow.
That's so funny because I've been getting fed Succession TikToks of the script versus the scene.
Yeah.
And Succession is known. Jimmy, have you watched any of it yet?
Not yet. No.
Well, the Roy siblings kind of talk like this, specifically Kendall. They're like, oh yeah, well, you just fuck it, you know, just like famously every other word is like and like and whatever, and it's very real. It sounds like a real conversation, but all of that's not written in, maybe some of them, but the script versus it. So that's very interesting how different shows are run differently. But I will say about Gilmore Girls, when I watch that show, my inner monologue starts talking fast and like whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And if I were to watch Prisoners, I would start being like, hey, how's it going?
What's going on? Oh, you'll start you'll end conversations with people with a BC in you. Like, because that's like a reoccurring thing throughout the show.
Our boy number six he's tense. He's pissed, dude. Every time he turns around, he breaks his neck. He literally, anything happens, he wants to look out a window, he freaking literally turns so fast, breaks his neck. Anytime he opens a door, he pulls it so fast, he closes it. A lot of the times the door opens by itself, but when it just cracks me up. He's very like jaggedy and sharp with all of his movements. He's like, whoop, pull it open and break my neck. And, you know,
trying to catch someone off guard.
He's a very British man, that is for sure. This is a very, I feel like there's a reason why this had to play in its entirety in the UK before they even considered bringing it to the US, because this is a really British show.
Yeah. So I got a couple more questions to kind of help sway my final answer for when we're ready to sign out. But one of them, and this is obviously all for Matt, is just talk to me about is the show, does it have peaks and valleys? Are there section, is the middle better than the beginning? Is the end better, worse than, how do you feel about it as a whole? Is it pretty consistent all the way through? Do you have a favorite episode? And is the finale, does it would you say the finale was satisfying as a whole for the series for you?
So I think that the 88% Rotten Tomatoes audience score is probably accurate. Like I said earlier, I think that this is a 17 episode show that could very easily have just been a 12 episode show. They do a couple weird episodes. There's an episode that's just all in the Old West. They've just changed the entire village to be an Old West setting for an episode. No explanation for it. It's my least favorite episode of the show. I don't know why this is
wouldn't
here.
Like that in 2023.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, but I actually think my favorite episode is the final episode, Fallout. The last 10 minutes of that episode, I think about regularly. And I had that spoiled for me because in that TV special that I talked about, showed you it consolidated the entire show into a 10 minute. Hey, here's what this show is about from front to back, because at that point there was no way to watch the show. In the 90s, they're just hey, this is this really cool show that happened for a year that no one seems to really talk about, but here's what it was about. But even knowing that, it didn't change the impact of what it says in the finale for me. The symbolism of what it was trying to say always hits for me. No, I think I've watched the show in its entirety maybe 6 times, and that's always getting to there is a big one. Checkmate, obviously the chess episode, that's a big one for me. It definitely plays a lot with diving around into all these different ideas, questioning what is real and what is fake, who can you trust, who can't you trust, why are they here? All of those things are constantly in there, but I think that the opening episode and the closing episode are the perfect bookends to the show. And then it is peaks and valleys in between, but there's never, except for maybe the Western episode, there's never an episode where I'm fully what are we even fucking doing here? I'm usually oh, this is great.
And follow up for you, just based off what you were just saying there, are there any episodes, even that, the Wild West one, if you skip that, is every episode giving you main plot content, or are there one-offs and filler quote-unquote episodes like the Wild West, or even in that episode that you don't like, is there something there that's important to know for just if you want to binge the whole series?
Kathleen, what was that show, that podcast you told me about where they just watched the first and last episode of a TV show?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was a Rolling Stone podcast. Yeah.
It was Too Long Couldn't Watch or something like that.
Too Long or didn't watch or something. Yeah. I forget
Too Long
what it
didn't
was.
Watch.
But it was celebrities that came on and did it with a guy from Rolling Stone. They watched the first and last of super popular. I listened to one where
it was only 6 episodes that they did.
Yeah. Jon Hamm watched the first and last episode of Gossip Girl and was Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good.
But the reason I'm asking is because I actually do think you might need the second episode is 2 parts technically. So I would be interested if you were to just watch episode 1 and then just watch episode 16 and 17, how cohesive it would be, because it is a lot more of they do a lot of cool things with story and plot. But I really think at the end of the day, it was also him really getting to flex his bone on
Fishbone.
Sorry, yeah, I meant to say muscle. I don't know where fucking bone came from. He got to flex, Jesus Christ. He got to flex his muscle on doing these really elaborate sets and cool coloring and cool camera shots and stuff like that. So it's
all about the journey, man.
Yeah, I think the middle parts are way more about giving you a visual style to make you feel that alienation and like concern and fear. But I think if you literally jump to the last two episodes from here, if you just like, I don't know if I want to watch the whole show, but I want some form of closure to see how this ended and why people were so angry. I don't think you'd be like, who is that? What's going on? Like, you just have to know that like number two changes a bunch. But I mean, you do get to meet number one at the end of the episode for what it's worth. Like, that's the one of the parts of the final episode. So you get there is a mystery up until the final episode of who is number one. And that does get answered.
Okay.
What happens with the rover?
Rover's just roving, man.
Yeah,
he's roving. He's freaking roving.
Now that was.
They allowed to have pointy objects in the village?
Well, here's the thing about the rover: he can subdivide.
Ooh,
I like that.
The pointy objects don't mean shit. He's like when you cut a tail off a lizard. You're just gonna grow another lizard.
Okay, I like that. That's awesome.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped. The scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
All right, let's get any final questions out, if you have any, before we ask the question.
I have one more
question.
All right,
Luke.
I just wanted to know, Matt, if someone were to ask you who your favorite character is it just an easy number six?
And then there's a gap. Number six.
Is there a close second, or is it not even?
I mean, allow you to even get too attached to any other characters besides, like I said, at the end of the day, it's the cat and mouse game between number six and various number twos.
Okay.
It is a lot more interesting to know that straight up the premise is, like you said, cat and mouse mind games on one guy. And Luke, you know, we did meet a girl that you tell us, Matt, is number nine.
I think pretty sure it's number nine. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
On that,
and we know that, you know, the one guy that he thought he liked and was his boy, you know, dies and actually didn't die. But it really does seem like every single character and every single piece of this village is a pawn that they're just moving around constantly. And each episode is probably going to be like, you know, for lack of a better term, like Monster of the Week, where it's just like you do an episode. Here's the mind game. He doesn't get out. And now we got the next episode. And then while this is happening, like Matt said, you're just like, Jesus, let's get our boy out of this. And then all this journey happens for 16 episodes. And then we get to our finale, whatever that is. And then you're like, okay, you know, all right, we got there or we didn't get there and
so,
whatever, because we don't.
Let me do this real quick, because the Wikipedia plot descriptions on the main episodes page is just one sentence pitches for each episode. So I feel like if I give you the next four episodes in the one sentence that Wikipedia describes it in, it'll give you an idea of what to expect in future episodes. So the next episode, the description is, a new prisoner, Nadia, may have information about the village that makes an escape attempt more possible. Episode 3, a desperate number two manipulates the dreams of number six to discover where his loyalties truly lie.
Wow.
And episode number 4, presented with the opportunity of the upcoming election, number six runs to get the post of number two.
I mean, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
And you're telling me, so see, that's a shame because, well, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we don't know, but hearing that there's another prisoner is very interesting to me, like another prisoner at the same time that they might be helping each other. I know you said that, you know, not a lot of the characters are going to be memorable except our boy, but it is still that hearing that description is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But Cobb was a prisoner.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's the other thing you always have to factor in.
Right.
And since
right.
this is not a visual medium, I was doing air quotes during
that. But you have to think about, like, even from an intelligence level, like, how many times can they possibly pull that ruse before number six begins to catch on and uses that as a manipulation back on his chess move? You know what I mean? Where he's like, how many, you know, this is the third time a new prisoner has showed up who says that they're going to help me. Like, obviously, I don't trust them and I'm going to pretend that I trust them to get back at the other person who's playing that card on, you know, like it's always that kind of like escalating, house of cards essentially for them.
My last question, Matt, is do we ever find out where number two's chair goes from when he comes up? And because
actually, I guess you do. I think you kind of do in the final episode. Now that I think about it.
Because it cracks me up. It cracks me up that the one time where he's pissed to go talk to number two, immediately number two just pops up. It's like, is he waiting down there for something? Like, what's going on here? is he chilling in his living room? And then all of a sudden, you know, number six comes in and his seat just pops
up. He's
like,
oh, that's why there's always a different number two. They work in shifts.
Yeah, that's good. I was actually going to ask if they summoned. Sleep. Yeah.
I don't have a problem going first if we want to do it that way.
I will just say my parting shot before we do it is that it's funny that Matt brought up the magicians because one of my notes said that this episode was giving like all that Josh a little bit where like everyone's like happy and it's like a utopian dystopia where it's like everyone's partying, everyone's rocking. And then it's like as soon as someone fucks up, they just like stop and they're like, we're going to kill you if you don't play along with this. Great episode. But anyway, James, you're first.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are very interesting to me when it comes to this show. Okay, finding out if we learn more about how they set this village up. Like, Matt, I know you said that they turned into a Western setting and we don't really find that out. But it is interesting to think about at certain times throughout these 17 episodes, he has this map that is, you know, only for the village, but I'm assuming we are going to get to a lot of these parts of the village and we get to explore them, which is cool to me. And to see how they're set up to be mind games, I like that a lot. I really want to know the answer to, are these people pawns that are there just working? Are these people pawns that are there being controlled? Are these people also under duress pretty much? And they're faking almost like, Kathleen, what you're saying with the magicians, where they're just totally like in a trance and they're just doing what they're supposed to be doing. Obviously, the Rove homie's the man. I love seeing that.
He's
guy.
That dude.
He's that bro. So my official answer is going to be added to the list.
Right.
I'm not saying no, but here's my unofficial answer. And this is, I honestly think this episode talked me into the fact that I wanted it on my list. But what I would like, actually, I feel like when it comes to this kind of show, I would like a documentary on this show.
Yeah.
I would almost rather watch a documentary on the show, get spoiled on what happens, and then decide what parts I want to rewatch. Just
I can show you that. I'll send you that 10-minute link, my dude. Someone uploaded that Fox special on YouTube recently.
Because a lot of that just does seem like one of those things where, I'm kind of similar to Luke where it's tough. Like when it's a 60s way of showing me an episode, it's tough. I really respect everything that it did. I respect seeing in my head, like, damn, there's some Lost or there's some Westworld or there's some of this, there's some of that. I respect all that and I do like it, but it is like 17 hours of this.
Yeah.
I mean, coming from like the quality of, you know, what you see just from the 60s but I think I do kind of want it on the list because of certain things that you're saying now. I want it to be one of those things where it's like, I'm not gonna, maybe it'll convince me to binge, but I have an episode when I got some time. Maybe I'll see what's going on with the next one.
Yeah.
See what's going on with the next one. But again, right now in my head, I just want to know the freaking end. Like that's something good though. That's something good that you're seeing this pilot and then we're talking about it. And I'm like, I want to know what the deal is. I want to know what's going on with this whole thing. And I want to know freaking now. Doesn't mean I want to watch 17 episodes in a row, but I want to know now, you know, so it's not binge immediately and it's not added to the top of my list. But if a documentary existed, 10 minutes is good. But if it was like an hour and it tells me the gist of the show and it shows me how it was made and it talks about Lost and all that kind of stuff, I'd be like, sit back, get the popcorn. I'm good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to, before the other two go, I do want to clarify, because I know that I've been pitching this for probably 2.5 years. It's been a hot minute that I've been like, you should do The Prisoner. And in my heart of hearts, I was like, I don't know if any of them are going to actually watch more of The Prisoner. But for what Binge Town is and what it represents, like, I feel like it's like, this is the show that made all of the shows that Binge Town is built on even a possibility. So it just felt like I mean, Kathleen said this is a classic Matt Kelly pick because
yeah.
Matt Kelly is all about the like, let's sit down and have an educational conversation about the yeah. history of something.
Yes, yeah. he is. I can go next because I was going to flow off that. So my friend Matt Kelly, we used to have a podcast. It revives every once in a while. We did about 100 episodes or so. I don't know how many we did, but...
It's like 96. We really should record four more.
Yeah, we really fucking should. But oh, it was yeah. a blast. And a lot of times we had guests, but often me, Julie, and Matt would just pick a show. And every time Matt picked a show, me and Julie would be like, here we go. And every time I understand why he picks it, I get it. And like he said, you know, an educational thing. Matt has a horror movie podcast where, I mean, they do every single movie you could ever think of horror movie and from the worst to the best. But like they all mean something to the genre. Right. And if you go to Matt Kelly's house, we'll have. Sorry if I keep saying your last name.
That's all right. Okay. It's a pretty public name.
Yeah. So VHS tapes across the wall. Like it's really it's part of your personality. It's part of who you are. So I totally understand it. I am going to watch 16 and 17.
Okay.
I'm as soon as we hang up, I'll put it on before bed and I'm sure it'll lull me to a good sleep and maybe some fun dreams, but I don't know that I'll be able to do the middle episodes, yeah. but I definitely will watch 16 and 17. So this is not and for that reason, I'm out. It's not an added to the list. It's not, but it's kind of a binge immediately, like only two episodes though.
Yeah. So, it's in the middle. It's in the middle. Yeah. You said all three in a weird way.
But in general, yeah. in general, like Luke said earlier, you know, talking about this show made it better for me. Just hearing you gush about it and talk through why you love it. And then Luke's questions and Jimmy's questions and our conversation, it made me want to watch it more. So 16 and 17 will be watched and you will get text messages about it.
Yes. Can't wait. I'll stay awake.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to jump off the back of both of you guys. Like, I'm taking some of both your arguments here where, Jimmy, you were pointing out some of my favorite things that we talked about in this podcast, like the Lost comparisons. It blew my mind when we talked about which government has control of the island. Right. I didn't even think about that. I really, really enjoy that mystery. And then the Mr. One mystery versus Mr. Six, or I'm Mr. calling him Mr. Six, like number that. Six. Sorry, right. One versus Mr. Six.
Like two that, versus six, you mean. Oh, you mean yeah. one total, like...
Yeah, who is number one, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the ending, ending. Like, all of that is super, you know, like, intriguing to me, and I love the chess symbolism as well. But as you could tell by the tone of my voice, I'll take the Shark Tank, I'm out. But I will definitely listen to Kathleen's recommendation after she does go through the final two episodes and let me know what you think there. But yeah, like, we do these pitch towns a lot of the time... We want to do it just for like our friends, get them on the podcast, let them gush about whatever they're passionate about. But honestly, a huge part of doing this is that so our audience gets to hear it. So even if we're out like as podcasters, I'm sure someone listening to this is now going to pick this up and be like, all right, yeah. Matt Kelly, I'm using the last name too. He convinced me right away to watch this show. So I'm really excited to get some feedback on what people think, because if anybody out there does go, that's a Binge Town audience member and they know us pretty well and listen to a lot of our shows and they continue through it and think that they would benefit from some sort of, you know, not, I won't say coverage, but like, you know, us talking about it more, even if it was like in town halls, that would be really cool for us because like you're saying, like there's a lot of good here. I'm just such a victim of the times and I hate it. Yeah. Trust me, I wish I could get over it, but this was really what I needed to sit down and watch this. And I do not regret it. It was a fun, goofy first episode, good vibes all around. And I'm happy that you could come on and share it with us, Matt. Yeah.
Let me throw this out there. I'm just, here's my own little pitch town. Mm-hmm. My little pitch town. I've said this to at least Kathleen and Jim. But like, let's talk about what's happening right now. It's looking like we're going to be in a really long creative strike in Hollywood, which, you know, like you guys are pretty much good for 2023. But 2024 is going to be a giant question mark on what is even coming out. You guys talk about if Kathleen walks away from those two episodes and goes, hey, it's pretty good. Like this could be a fun show if you're just trying to find an old show to do something with. Because it is full of that mystery of like keeping a weekly track of one episode a week just to be like, I don't know where this mystery is going. But I look forward to whatever you guys decide to do. I would love to listen to y'all break down like Twin Peaks I'd love to go back and listen to if there's someone on the show who hasn't seen Lost doing a Rooks and Vets with some of that. Yeah. I wanted to publicly pitch that, like, I love what you guys do. And I'd love for you guys to even dip your toes into, like, complete it series for the sake of, like, hey, let's just revisit a show that's baller.
Yeah.
We just haven't, honestly, we just haven't had the time, but we did the OA that way. We did Winona that way. And we like doing that. But God, the last 6 months of shows was insane.
That's what I'm saying. HBO's don't do that. Like, don't do that for July. I'm saying by September of January of 2024, you might be looking at like an all reality TV schedule on television, which is great by my standards, but still.
Yeah, it is.
Love Island. We can do that.
Yeah. My brother got me hooked onto Survivor now, man. I'm all in.
Wait. Yeah. We're doing a Survivor pod for 45 because I'm obsessed with it.
I'm excited to see you guys are, no lie, one of my absolute favorite podcasts of like the thousands of podcasts that I listen to and all of the shows on the Geekscape network. Like anytime I bump into anybody who's even like a little bit of a TV nerd, I'm like, you need to listen to the Bingetown podcast. It's great.
You're the best.
It's such an honor to be on Pitchtown. It means a lot to me. I adore all of your minds and your input. And I do hope that when we eventually do hit the lull that this writer's strike is going to create, and like hopefully it's only a couple months lull, but we could be in this for the long haul. It sounds like the Actors Guild and the Directors Guild are also planning to strike now in solidarity, so that's going to just continue to push things back. I don't want there to be a void in my phone downloads on my podcast app.
We won't be taking any breaks. Don't you worry.
Yeah. Good, good.
But let's give the people all your podcasts, Matt, because there's so many to list off.
Yes.
Let's hear them.
Let's see. So I'm just going to work throughout the week. So on Mondays is Christmas 365, where my friend Dylan and I talk about something Christmassy every Monday. On Tuesdays is Alyssa Explains It All, hosted by Alyssa Lube from The Circle on Netflix. There's also Every Other Tuesday now. Before My Time with Gelsey Laurie, a celebration of all things vintagey. We've actually done an episode about The Prisoner on there. On Wednesdays is One Hit Thunder, where myself and Chris Fafalios of the band's Punchline Pack and Another Cheetah break down our favorite one-hit wonders with various musicians. We've had some pretty cool guests. Yeah. Probably our biggest get was Jared from Bowling for Soup, the lead singer of Bowling for Soup, coming on to talk to us.
Love it.
Horror Movie Night is every Thursday night. And then Friday mornings is Weird Algorithm, where myself and Matt Milligan from the band Weedus are reviewing single song Weird Al has ever released in order of release and ranking them. And then the newest show that I do is White People Problems, an OC podcast, where myself and Joe Farron of the Fright School podcast are watching the OC. I've never seen it before, and it's Joe's favorite show. So after that, we might, spoiler alert, because we just finished season one. We're about to start season two. This time next year, we'll pretty much be done all of it. But we might be stealing a Bingetown host, possibly, because we think the next white people problem show we need to talk about is Pretty Little Liars, which
Kathleen, dare you,
which neither one of us have seen, so we need a guide to Pretty Little Liars.
I will guide you.
Matt,
shout
you had her first, so you could take her back too if you need her.
Shout out to Matt Milligan, who you do the Weird Algorithm podcast with. He's the only, that's the only Simpsons episode I've ever seen, is when he came on my favorite episode and pitched the Simpsons. Like, okay, here we go.
Which is a wild, wild episode. Him and I are also similar to White People Problems. Like we're at the halfway point on Weird Al's career now, because like in the 80s, he put out an album every year and we just finished the 80s, but the 90s, the 2000s and beyond, he only released 7 albums in that entire like 3-decade gap. So it's like, shit, we're gonna run out of stuff soon. So I've pitched that our next show will be called Green Data, and it'll just be us doing the same concept,
Green
but
Day.
All the Green Day songs.
I like that.
I'm actually amazing. Yeah.
When you talk about white and nerdy, just let me know.
I'll call
I'm
you
ready
up
for that one.
I'll call you up. actually, that show, I will give a quick plug, because that show, I'm going to say this as sincere as I can. It gets good numbers. It gets better numbers than I think most people who create podcasts are able to get. But man, for the cool ass guests that we've had on that show, like, everyone check out Weird Algorithm. I got to sit down and talk with fucking Paul Scheer, like Dre really from the cool. League. Like, that was amazing for me to experience. So yeah, check that out. We've got some pretty cool guests in our back pocket too that we're working towards. But like, I got to talk to a comedy legend in my eyes. So like, and him talking about Weird Al for an hour with us was like so insightful. He actively told us that his show Human Giant, which was him and Aziz Ansari and Rob Hubel, would not exist if not for the Al TV MTV specials that Weird Al used to do in the 80s. And I thought that was like the coolest thing to have anyone say on our show, is like, oh, this thing that jumpstart our career only exists because we loved this weird 1 hour a year show that he would put on. Mm-hmm. So
it's amazing.
That's awesome. Well, Matt,
Go check him out. So many. I can't believe you do that.
At Saint Mort on Instagram, you can find me everywhere. Also, and we know podcasting if you need editing.
Well, definitely, we know podcasting if you need editing, because we just took Matt away from his job for 2 seconds so that he can come onto the pod with us. But he's working his ass off for you guys. So check out We Know Podcasting. But Matt, seriously, we took 3 years to get you on Binge Town. That's a catastrophe. We'll get you on way quicker for the next one. Kathleen, if you watch 16 and 17, you know it's on my list. If you find that it's something we need to talk about, you might be able to convince Luke. We'll see. But you convinced me. I'm already, it's on my list. So if we need to bring Matt to talk about the finale, let's do it. Also want to reiterate, this isn't the first time we've talked to Matt. Obviously, Kathleen has, but we did Harry Potter. We've done Scream with Matt on other Geekscape stuff. So yeah, we know
Geekscape
how much of a blast
TV
it is.
Geekscape TV on YouTube, baby.
Yeah, we know how much of a blast it is talking with Matt. So we'll get him back. I can't believe it took this long to get him. But Kathleen, hit us with that outro.
Okay, so this is some of the fun stuff we're going to be putting out moving forward. There's not a ton of shows coming out. We just finished Succession, which had its own feed, but also posting on Binge Town. We just finished Yellow Jacket Season 2. We did some Barry coverage. We did Mandalorian. And in the past, we did White Lotus and House of the Dragon and The Last of Us and all of that. Moving forward,
we've got Silo
going on, which is on Apple TV, which is one of my favorite shows I'm watching right now. Jimmy's killing it on that pod. Also, moving forward, we'll have The Witcher. Me and Jimmy just confirmed today that we are doing Cruel Summer Season 2. Off of Matt's suggestion, he shot me a text this morning being like, hey, if there's a lull, you should do this, because me and Matt loved it for Season 1. We talked a few episodes of it on my favorite episode of. So that's a cool mystery. That'll have its own feed. So just hit subscribe on Bingetown TV and you'll never miss an episode. But thanks for listening. And, you know, DM us on Instagram or Twitter at Bingetown TV if you've seen The Prisoner, if you have any questions or anything for either Matt, Jimmy, Luke, myself, whatever you think. We are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.